we now started to see a couple of real good signs. First, the fact that the metals, gold and silver and even copper now are just so, so strong. And this is important because some people say, well, maybe they're buggy whips. Maybe their time has passed somehow. Because think back, if you invested in buggy whips up through 1900, as each year went by, less and less, and before you knew it, you were out of business. The difference on this end is not only does the world need metals, it needs metals more than any other time that it needed it. And a lot of years have not been spent looking for it. It's become much harder to find. Grades have shrunk. The areas in the world we can go with complete safety have greatly shrunk.
Peter, how are you doing?
Very nice to join you.
Yeah, thanks for coming up on board. You're on record, and you say this to your clients, some of the challenges that people need to build their ARC for. And I wanted to talk a couple of those about, specifically the national debt, the retirement aging crisis that we're seeing in our country, and the BRICS. Let's first start with debt. This is on your radar, and you're bringing this, you're sounding the alarm bells now, and I'm agreeing with you, but why now, and why does it feel, or what do you see it as? We have an imminent problem with debt in America.
So we've had the problem quite some time, and it has been a story spoken about. It's certainly not a new issue. But what's brought it to the forefront, I think, and why we're even seeing industrial as well as Wall Street titans openly speaking about it now is because it's really called into question now, in a few years, are we going to even be able to service the interest payments? I don't think the debt is even something anybody should even realistically think somehow is all going to be paid back. We now see the government spending on average twice the amount that it takes in each month. And when I started in the business a long, long time ago, 40 years ago, we didn't even have $1 trillion in debt. We didn't even use the word trillion for anything. And here now we have multi-trillion dollar yearly deficits and there's no control over it. It's getting worse, not better. Another issue of those five is there's no political will to do anything about it either. In fact, it seems to be the opposite. They seem to be pushing through as much as they can while they can. And governments around the world and investors around the world have taken note of that. It's one of the reasons I think things like gold and others have performed well, because people realize we're getting to the point. And thankfully, there's a little bit of bipartisanship left in Washington in an organization called the Congressional Budget Office. And they most recently upped their view to $54 trillion in debt, the way the country is going, and in less than 10 years. So if you start thinking about a simple 5% interest rate at that point, and you think about where we've been in terms of revenue, best year we ever had as a country was 2022. We took in $5.3 trillion. So if you give that some growth, we're going to have a real trouble servicing the interest and also paying the other necessities. Forget about luxuries, necessities, in order for the government to function. And the average person is not aware of that yet. They're not caught up to that. But the fact that it's at least being spoken publicly now and being brought up, it may take another 6 or 12 months, but once they recognize it and they realize how bad it is, I think a lot of people are going to be very concerned, because for the other reasons that you some of them that you point out, combined with that, really is going to lead to a much tougher social, economic, and political period in America. Certainly nothing like I believe this country's ever seen before.
Yeah. So is this an inflationary or a deflationary problem? And I think that's really the trillion-dollar question. Where do you fall on that?
Yeah, it's inflation out as far as you can see, because the inflation genie is out. I think it's absurd. As much as using the word transitory, the Fed should also get rid of never saying 2% interest, 2% inflation again. It would take a worldwide depression, I think, to get back to that level. And I think the big shock, the untold story so far, but I got a feeling someone like you has already brought it up, is that if you recall, it was as early as the middle of 2022, and I pointed at the don't worry, be happy crowd on Wall Street, was already talking about interest rate cuts were coming. And then in 2023, they missed. And they said, well, if you look at the forecast at the beginning of this year, there were going to be 7 interest rate cuts this year. Now many are down to 2. And now we've had multiple Fed trip people speak in recent days that there may not be no cuts to at least 2025. And that's a very interesting scenario, because the reason they're saying that is they have not able to get inflation to a level. You know, Andy, the inflation, the way the government computes it now, if you compute it as they did up through the late 1980s and 90s, we would have triple the amount that they're reporting now. And I think the tripling is actually what true inflation is. And I think they know that too. So that's one of the reasons why I think when push comes to shove and all this hits, they'll try to inflate their way out. Deflation or depression, like, it's too harsh for governments to deal with. We've seen that in third world and so forth. So I think it will be inflation as a way to try to get out, not harsh deflation.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's funny. Well, it's not funny, but anecdotally, I had a conversation just this morning with my kids, and I have 5 children. And my kids that are the ones that are in high school, we were around the breakfast table, and they were commenting how expensive it is just to cook eggs now. And I don't know what eggs cost in where you live, but down here in Georgia, we're paying for organic eggs, $6 for a dozen. And I don't see that as really sustainable. And then I made the comment, it's like $6 for a can of mayonnaise. So just food staples. Inflationary.
I don't know if it's a purposely scam, accidental, or combination somewhere, but the cost of living has gone up a lot more than governments are reporting. Anybody that's been around knows it, and it does, and it's all across the board. It's not restricted. It's in medical. It's in living standards. It's in energy. It's in food. It's in leisure. It's everywhere. Restaurant owners I know have shown me things have tripled in 2 or 3 years. Everyday staples, clams, simple things that people eat. So that 2% inflation is I wouldn't take a long bet on it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, neither would I. Let's go to the aging retirement crisis. What exactly do you mean by that? Do you mean the crisis that we're not bringing enough people in to pay for retirees that are going to be on the government payroll, like Social Security and Medicaid here in the next few years? Or do you mean just the retirees that are going to be retired? People to fill those jobs because they're leaving the workplace.
It's that and one other thing. First of all, in the retirement, 65% of Americans are working paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
There's nothing on the horizon to suggest that wage increases, while inflation's staying moderate or lower, could allow them to start to get enough discretionary income to put enough aside to reach the minimum numbers that are talked about now on what retirement true costs will be. So that bodes a problem that people are going to have to work much longer. I can tell you that I just turned 68 and I was talking to a young man today that I first met in 1995 at a gold show. And, I didn't realize how old I had grown. Yeah. And, I know things are much tougher for me to do now. And I can imagine if the good Lord keeps me for another 10 or 15 years here, it'll get even tougher. So we're going to have multiple problems from that. But where you just said it, the lesser people, more people having to collect from in order to support an aging society. But the one thing that's not being spoken about, I shouldn't say not spoken, it's not spoken openly, and it's certainly not being spoken in the mainstream financial media. But a classic example is what's happening in Canada now, and quite regularly. People have reached an older age, their health is not good, and they really don't have any finances. And the government passed laws and created monies for those people to take their own lives. I think it's one of the most horrific thoughts, no matter whether a person is a person of faith or not, that our only solution for somebody that's a human being, that because they don't have money or they don't have good health, that the simplest and easiest way to solve the problem is just have them disappear. And why I say that's important, because here's the battle, if you and I are right, some of the discussions we've already had, that things are much tougher. You're going to have a 28-year-old, 38, maybe even a 48-year-old, seeing taxes only go up more and more. Remember, governments can only do two things. They can raise taxes or cut spending. They're going to see older people requiring and requesting and needing much more dollars spent medically. And someday some young person is going to say, listen, I can't put food on my table. You want to raise whatever you want to call it at that time, Medicare, whatever it may be called. But this guy, Grandich, who's 88, lived well, collected for a lot of years, and wants $500 lung transplant. And where I say the aging crisis, as boomers peak, which we're going to soon peak, and we lessen numbers of us, wealth is going to transfer from us to younger folks. And politics follows wealth. Show me where the wealth is, and I'll show you where politicians are politically trying to get voters. And so that is going to be an issue. It's not today or tomorrow, but for anybody that still plans out several years, that aging crisis combined with the retirement crisis is number two of the five things that I believe we need a financial arc for.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. It's quite scary. And really what you said about what's going on in Canada, it should be disturbing to all of us, but I find there's almost an irony. I think that's the right word here. Is that the medical profession for so long, for my whole life, for most of my life, was always known for saving lives, right? And now they're taking lives. So, it's just really disturbing. So let's talk about, and I want to marry this with the bricks, because you talk about the fourth instance of building your ARC was the bricks. I'd like you to work that out a little bit more. Sure. And is that really, do you see the bricks behind their big rise in the gold price the last few to several months? And it's been on a tear. And it was even, as we talk about it on today, the 19th of April, we're up a little, but I think that's inconsequential. I think really the big story is just how strong it's looked in the past several months. Yeah. So yeah, who's buying and are the bricks behind that?
I think they are. I think they're one of the people behind it. I think when it's all said and done, one of the biggest things Wall Street will have missed, because people assume they're sharp and they always get everything ahead of time and all that kind of stuff, is what is happening with the BRICS and what impact it will have to the United States. I have stated, and I stated it a couple of years ago, and believe every month it gets more reasons to believe it's correct, that when the BRICS reach whatever their peak is or crest, what they have done to world trade will be the same influence that the Industrial Revolution brought to world trade. And what Americans don't seem to understand, I think it's because they're not being told, is whoever these countries are, because right now it's not, oh, they're just a handful of countries. And, oh yeah, I heard there's 40 more, but whatever it is done, that's business that used to be done with the United States and won't be. They are looking not to just partially deal with us, but to deal with us at all and to work within themselves and also eventually somehow not have to use our dollar in order to facilitate and do their transactions among themselves. All of those are huge, huge negatives to the United States. And part of the thing, and this is still up for debate, but it's been something I've been clear about, and one of the reasons I've been so bullish on gold is that China, and I think they expect to be not only the economic leader of the world, but certainly the leader of, or the main person leading the BRIC nations, has been an enormous buyer, because they recognize that whatever happens sometime in the future, either the United States will end being the reserve currency, will face a competition, or at the very minimum, the BRICS themselves will have gold in some way on transactions being closed, or at the end of the day, like our gold standard used to be, if one ends up doing more trading with the other after a year, they provide them with a certain amount of gold and so forth. But they want to have gold to be able to say, listen, We're not that paperless tiger known as the U.S. dollar, which everybody's lost so much money in. We have, and part of it is, and gold comes out. So answer your question. The BRICS are going to be an extremely formidable foe to the United States if they're not already. And they are part of the reason why gold has performed in the manner that it has. And the fact that physical trading moved away from London and the U.S., where the paper market artificially suppressed it and kept not the real valuations that should have been placed on gold. And now that ability to do that is lessened. I don't think they've disappeared forever, Andy, because I consider those bears the same as herpes. It may go away for a while, but sooner or later, they come back.
I wouldn't know, but yes.
Yeah. Just would tell you that I don't think they'll be as formidable or powerful as they once were, but I do think the movement of physical gold trading to Asia was one of the biggest keys for gold to finally start to be more representative and to be priced in a better level than it had been. And yet here in the U.S., it's still the Rodney Dangerfield. It gets no respect. Wall Street still treats it like kryptonite. But I can assure you that outside of the United States, particularly in Asia and even parts of Europe and other areas, people have made gold part of their portfolio. You know, it's an amazing thing, you know, still a little bit in the financial service business and the fact that I'm part of a planning group, but there's only three tier one investments in the world: stocks, bonds, and gold. You go to 99% of all investors in the U.S., including advisors, A, they're shocked to learn that gold is a tier one investment too, but they only really have one or two of those three. They don't have all three. And yet, told that they really are on par with each other because they're all tier one investments. So it's been good to see. It's been finally been good to be validated, especially when in 2021, I predicted that gold would outperform stocks and bonds for the next few years. And people, even my wife thought I was crazy. So the bottom line is, I think the BRICS are something that if you don't know about it, and I don't mean you or your boys, but I think most of America that don't, they're going to learn the hard way of how big the BRICS are going to come on the world stage.
Got it. I want to work that out in just a second here, but I want to touch on gold stocks here. I want to ask you about that. I am an investor, for the record, in gold stocks and both the seniors, the senior producers, as well as the juniors. You made a tweet that I don't know if I retweeted or not, but I certainly liked it. That the bear, I paraphrase, but the bear is over. you put the bear down for in a grave, if you would. What was your thinking behind that? Why do you think that the bear market in gold stocks, specifically junior gold stocks, is over? And why is this different now?
I would say it was part prayer. Because 40 years, I think if I was able to show my entire record for 40 years, it's been one of pretty one to be proud of.
Sure.
But the thing that was just a blemish 2 years ago grew to a huge growth on the side of my face, because as much as I was right about gold, as much as I was right about getting out of bonds and all that stuff, I also got very involved in mining and junior stocks. And a year ago, when they had already fallen about half of what they ended up falling, back up the truck, they can't possibly go lower. Well, they did. And even at the end of this year, I said, it's no way they can go any lower. Certainly, we began the year again, picking up where we left off. But, and hopefully this is a correct but, we now started to see a couple of real good signs. First, the fact that the metals, gold and silver and even copper now are just so strong. And this is important because some people will say, well, maybe they're buggy whips. Maybe their time has passed somehow. Because think back, if you invested in buggy whips up through 1900, as each year went by, less and less, and before you knew it, you were out of business. The difference on this end is, not only does the world need metals, it needs metals more than any other time that it needed it, and a lot of years have not been spent looking for it. It's become much harder to find. Grades have shrunk. The areas in the world where you can go with complete safety have greatly shrunk. And so there should be a need for them, even if we're too early. If there was anything said about Grandage over the years, it was, he tends to be too early. That comes from a mentor of mine who taught me years ago, Pete, be 2 years too early, just don't be a day late. So I think part of the turn is the fact that we're recognizing now how much metal is needed. You know, people say, well, isn't this EV story kind of dying? You know, people aren't cars, factors are backing away. Yeah, it's probably dying from what people were predicting 2 years ago, but it's still moving forward and it's still going to be significant. But no one's talking about, and you mentioned AI, and I only learned this in the last few weeks, how much more electricity is going to be needed for AI. Not only do we not have the grids at all, we're going to need the metals at all to support the expansion that's going to be needed to provide all this power. So what I'm getting at is that whatever reasons, and there's plenty why I think hindsight can show why they stay down while the metals move, we're seeing classic signs now to make that statement. We're seeing money returning to private placements, which is critical. Junior little companies live off of private placements and keep raising money because they keep hoping to find something and need more money to do it. We're seeing those private placements double, where the original offer was to raise $3 million, and 2 days later they announced, oh, we got six and we closed it already. That was very critical factor. We've seen some technical rebounding in more of the majors, and I don't like technical analysis for 16-cent stocks. I don't think that's what's going to move them. It's going to be pure fundamentals. But we're also seeing some companies start to say, we're hearing from people we haven't heard from. I can say that I haven't heard from some people in quite a few years. In fact, they said, Pete, last I heard, you left the metals in 2013. I did. But the bottom line is I think we're at the early stage. And here's the caveat, Andy, as you and I speak. If a correction started tomorrow, in other words, we open up Monday and gold decides to correct $100 or even $200, I don't think the shares are going to go straight up. They may not go down as much or go down at all because they're so washed out. The only other thing that can keep them from moving fairly nicely up, say over days or weeks, is that we get a fairly sharp and quick correction, which is still not certain is going to happen. But I do think they've been washed out for so long, Andy, over so long of a period of time. Doesn't matter which ones you looked at. Basically, anybody that's left holding them, like me, that for 2 years, they're not stuck at much higher prices. The washout has really brought the averages down. So any return of interest, this is the one caveat also, don't root for a stock market crash. We want things to roll over. We don't want money. Just like if I'm not a fan of Bitcoin, I don't want it to blow up and be 10,000 tomorrow. I wouldn't mind if it took 2 years to go back to 10,000 and people recognize what it really is and flow that money into metals. But I think the stage is at least set for the metals now, the mining shares, to do what we used to say on the speaking circuit, and we were proven wrong. We all used to say, even some of the guys and gals that are still out there, we would say this years ago, owning mining shares is just like owning gold. That proved very wrong the last couple of years. But I do think from this point on, the leverage or an opportunity to make larger percentage gains will come from the shares, not the physical metals.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you said. Probably what's the most interesting to me is just you as a tenured, experienced investors in. I don't want to put emotion in you, but there's some discouragement there. And that's actually a very bullish thing. And there's discouragement in me too, in the sense of like, I've gotten beaten up and I just started nibbling and then going bigger in the last 18 months. And I'm with you. It's already been so washed out and the sentiment is so negative, yet the need is, you can't make a more bullish case for just about anything metal related or even energy related in my mind. So anyways, interesting topic. I'd like to close with this is, let's say nobody's ever heard of you. How do you start building your ARC, or is it too late to start building your ARC?
Well, I'm sure there's a few people out there that wish they never heard of me. After 30 years, there's got to be a few of those, but my financial arc is this. We went through the first one, the situation, the second one. Third, we didn't talk about, but it is.
Well, we can talk about it. Go ahead.
It is a crisis, the immigration. It's minimally an economic invasion. It will, however you want to describe what reasons people are here, how many will be. One thing is for certain, whatever the number is, 7 million, 10 million, 15 million, whatever it ends up being, almost all of them came with their shirts on their back. And if they're going to stay in some way, shape, or form, legally, illegally, whatever the situation is, they will only add to the crisis that we spoke about because of how hard it's already now. And states and local governments don't have printing presses like the federal.
Right. Very important point.
So
yes.
The other part of that will be, and I suspect sooner than we later, and it's not something I'm actually proud to talk about, Andy, but I think there's going to be civil unrest for two reasons. We've already seen some of the migrants here in New York and other places grow deterred that they don't think they're being treated, demanding more. But then there's also part of our regular society, people that are legal, been living here, struggling, what have you, and are seeing what little they normally get taken from them in order to take care of this situation. And the way I like to describe it is I don't suspect them to take it sitting down. I think they're going to have to become civilly active. So one of my concerns is if those sides start meeting and so forth and so on. And then the fifth one, and I think this is critical because all four of them, the retirement, the aging, the immigration, and the BRICS, you would hope that somehow government could come together and fix or make work towards a better environment. And we have total political paralysis. We have two parties, the Democrats and Republicans, that really can't work together, really, truly can't work together. And they each have sections, growing sections in their organizations that are moving further in the direction they normally are. So the left has more people going hard left, and the right has some going hard right. And when you know what hits the fan, Americans are going to expect these groups to come together as they did in 2008. They didn't do a great job. They could have done a lot more to prevent some of the issues we had, but they did manage to get in rooms, solve the crisis from going to a worldwide depression. I don't think there's that capability now, Andy. And so that is another concern. So that financial arc is really a few things that I tell people. One, it starts with a model that I've lived at least half of my career in, and that less is more. 7 out of 10 families, Andy, that we continue to see, and I think it's represented all around the country, live at least one lifestyle above where their finances truly support. How do they do it? They borrow, or they should be putting away for things in the future, but use that money now to live for a lifestyle today. I really think that knowing governments only can do two things, raise taxes, cut spending, capital preservation now overpowers capital appreciation. 10 or 20 years ago, it was okay to be aggressive trying to turn a dollar to 3, 4, and 5. But I think now as much concern has to be about preserving what you have as trying to turn what you have into much more dollars. And there's unfortunately too many people still in this right side without a lot of experience or an understanding of what can go wrong. I'll close with this. I say it sarcastically, but there's such dead seriousness behind it. I've said this often, Andy, it may be the first time you're hearing it, but I truly believe you can throw the average financial advisor off the top of the Empire State and they'll all say the same thing all the way down. Hey, so far, so good. We just don't recognize potential bad until it hits the fan. And I think when it hits the fan, it's not if. We don't have the cards to play or the things that we've had before that can lessen the troubles that I foresee. And that's why I say in awe, kind of like Noah. I'm sure Noah in his early days, it was sunny and 80 degrees. And they were going, hey, schmuck, what are you building that thing for? They say it to me now, some people, in the way that they write in emails and all. But I think it's prudent. And the worst case I always tell everybody, Andy, is if I'm completely wrong and somehow Nirvana turns, what we did didn't hurt us. It just lessens potentially if we're right.
Right. Peter, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, follow you, or do business with you, how do they find you?
Well, our business is open just to U.S. residents, but they are. PeterGranich.com explains that. I never thought I'd say this. I've become a tweeter. And when I think about Andy, that 30 years ago, I would write a newsletter, get it to the printer, get it typeset, run it, wait till it dries, fold it, stuff it in envelopes. And 2 to 3 days later, our clients and potential people heard about it. Now, in a matter of seconds, the world hears about it. So Twitter's become a very useful and enjoyable way to communicate. And I also have a YouTube channel where gentlemen like been kind of like you to give me a chance to be interviewed. I put that up on the YouTube channel.
Excellent. I will link to all of that. And by the way, my father, 30 years ago, subscribed to your newsletter.
Now I really feel old.
And I follow you religiously on Twitter. So
thank you very
Peter Granich, I want to thank you so much for your time. I'll link to everything that we just talked about so people can reach out to you if they choose to do so.
Thank you, Andy. God bless.
Thank you.